Hey everyone, how's it going? My name is Matt Jarbo. Welcome back to another episode of Podio Commentary. And I feel like this episode is a bit of a departure from the kind of movies I usually cover, which, you know, last week I did The Batman, the week before that was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and of course, today is Disney's Encanto. Which, look, I'll start off by saying this. I actually feel like not only is the 60th animated feature from Walt Disney an important movie, I think it's actually one of the most important movies when it comes to emotional health, mental health, and family dynamics that we've seen come out of Hollywood or any real form of storytelling in quite some time. This is a movie that I'll fully admit, the very first time I watched it, I hated it. I woke up early, I think it was Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, whatever day it came out, and I was just not really feeling it. I'm not a morning person, I'm a night owl, it's just the way that I operate. But of course, I knew Encanto dropped on Disney Plus, and I knew that my 2-year-old and my 4-year-old were going to be watching it. So I sat down, and I'm just trying to wake up, and I came in about 20 minutes late to the movie, and I'm listening to the music, and I'm like, oh, this is so freaking Lin-Manuel Miranda, this is so self-indulgent, oh my god, it's terrible. And I didn't like the movie one damn bit. None of the jokes landed, none of the characters resonated, nothing. I'm on Twitter bitching about it, you know, and of course people out there were agreeing with me, but unlike probably those people, because I have children, I've watched this movie now at least 30 times, and I was wrong. I can admit that. I can admit that as a near 40-year-old male that I am wrong. It's okay. The world's not over. I can admit this. I love this movie. And I don't just want to say that I love this movie because it's like an animated film or whatever. I truly think that this movie touches on a lot of interesting elements with the family dynamic. And even though I am not a person of Latin descent, I'm Canadian, Germanic Canadian. I think my 23andMe was like 99.9%, you know, Caucasian AF, so like 1% Italian. And whatever, that's my biological makeup. But I think that it's not difficult to dive into this movie and to really kind of like start to, you know, identify with not only Mirabelle's character, but maybe the other characters in the movie about like how we kind of hide elements from of ourself, from our family, based upon the ideas that our family has of us, and how the black sheep is oftentimes not even very guilty of the things that they're relatively accused of, or they can feel like they're going to be that way. It's kind of like a societal issue where if you keep telling someone they're bad, eventually they just do bad things because they believe that's all that they have in regards to value. So this particular movie, again, like it just speaks to all of these things, but it's set in this very interesting kind of enclosed, encapsulated Encanto, this little village in Colombia. That around the time this movie takes place is somewhere in the neighborhood of around like the 1950s to the 1960s. And I have questions. Oh, I have questions when it comes to how certain elements of the world works and whether or not certain things may go down a bit on the, a bit on the crazy side. But we'll get to that when we talk about the world itself. Now, this movie went through multiple iterations and was actually one that was starting to be worked on as the directors were finishing up Zootopia and Moana. And this is where they had started working on this new idea. And they knew that they wanted it to be a musical. But that actually turned into a Latin American musical once Lin-Manuel Miranda came on after finishing up Moana. Now, if you have seen Moana, and I'm sure if you have kids or you're a Disney-phile or whatever, you've seen Moana. The music in Encanto is kind of similar to Moana, the way that it's presented. But if you really loved how Moana presented its songs, and again, that was a movie that I was not super interested in when I went to go see it back when it came out in 2016. I wasn't like, you know, edge of my seat wanting to go watch Moana. It was like a Thursday afternoon. We have nothing else to do. Let's go see a movie. I walked out of that one going, holy crap. I loved it. It's amazing. And again, even with Zootopia, a movie that I was excited to see, but that has become my favorite Disney animated film. And I'll need to talk about that one because that movie is very fascinating when you look at the core idea and how applying that to kind of, let's say, this like society at large on social media, like how it's a movie that is anti-racist but also pro-cop. Again, that's a full other discussion to have with that film, but I love Zootopia. Just don't look up Zootopia Rule 34. Just don't do it. Don't do it. Anyway, so during like this development process of Encanto, they really wanted to like talk about the Latin American culture, and they wanted to really kind of tell the story based around that life. And so back in 2018, they actually, a group of them went down to Colombia for a couple weeks to kind of learn a lot about the society. According to Wiki here, it says they met with architects, chefs, and artisans to immerse themselves in the country's culture. They also visited cities like Bogota and Cartagena, and they found inspiration in smaller towns like Salento and Barichara. In Barichara, they befriended a local tourist guide named Alejandra Espinosa Uribe, if I'm saying that wrong, I apologize, who showed them around the town. And believe it or not, they were so taken with Alejandra and her style and her look, and they actually modeled Mirabel's character, her design, after Alejandra. Her, you know, big curly black hair, large eyeglasses, and a lot of her gestures, even like elements of her clothing were kind of brought around by Alejandra. And that, you know what, that actually, when I read that, that actually made me like really happy. It did. Because, you know, it's always kind of cool when art imitates life. And I know art will always imitate life, and sometimes life is weirder than art. But I enjoyed that they decided to really kind of dive into this culture. Now, there's not a lot that I would argue a lot of people understand about like Latin American culture or, you know, Southern American culture or things along those lines as like a, you know, look, I'm a suburbanite white dude. So I didn't grow up with that particular type of family. And it's interesting to see like the multi-generational approach to that lifestyle, how they all live in the en casita. Whereas here in the States, we don't really have that. Although I do feel that currently with like the housing situations, you know, and rising costs across the board, multi-generational households might come back with a vengeance. And hey, listen, you guys might hear me even talk about that down the road with my mother or father moving in. But that's just kind of how these things go. But anyway, getting back on the subject here, like most Disney movies, hell, most movies in general, Encanto went through a multitude of different versions of the film during its development. And certain ideas were, you know, brought up and then ultimately tossed into the can. One of these ideas included a young modern day woman being transported by a magical doorknob into another world, which is kind of an Alice in Wonderland type story, and I think wouldn't really tie into the themes that they were going for here. Eventually, there was another storyline where Mirabel's father, Augustine, was the family patriarch who discovered the Encanto and personally built the casita there. The film would have been set in the 1950s and featured like cosmopolitan and modern fashions. Again, this is, you know, coming in from Wiki. And also apparently motor vehicles, which is where Alma, Abuela, had originally come from. That was meant to be in there as well. And that the casita was an extension of only Alma's personality rather than the entire family. And the film would have gone on to follow multiple generations and the casita over roughly a 100-year time span, rather than literally, I think, like 2 days, which is what the movie actually takes place. And that to me feels like really complicated, really convoluted. It's like these stories need to be told in a very short amount of time. Expose the problem, establish a solution, get to the conclusion, everyone's happy, and you can do it all in a way that's tight and entertaining and really on point without it, you know, feeling like a chore to get there. If they would have set this thing like in a 100-year time span, I think it would have really delineated a lot of what's there. But then again, this movie is one of Disney animated films like smallest in scope. You know, it's like you have the village, you have the casita, you've got the family, but it's really Mirabel's story. The casita is a part of it. The casita is a character in the story, but really it's Mirabel and her grandmother and their interactions and how the family kind of reacts to the expectations put on them by Abuela. And it's very interesting how it all kind of plays out. And again, a lot of us out there can really relate to this It's one of the reasons why I do love stories about other cultures, because it's not hard to tell how many people out there literally like have the same story just with a different flair attached to it, you know? And that's why these stories work as well as they do. And I really enjoyed how it all came together once I started watching the movie with a clear head, with a clear mind, and also watching it from start to finish, because it took a little bit to get me to that point of actually being able to sit down and watch the whole movie. Whereas now I've, you know, I'll give you guys a quick side story. When I take my 4-year-old to preschool, she wants me to play songs, right? So oftentimes it's like the Sing soundtrack. But with Encanto, she wants to hear Encanto. So the other day I was taking her to preschool. We're listening to We Don't Talk About Bruno. I pull up, I pause it, I let her out of the car. I start going on about my business. And I went back and restarted the soundtrack and listened to the soundtrack myself. That is how much I enjoy this movie. I just really, really like the soundtrack. It's crazy. Okay, so let's actually talk about the movie itself, because this is where things in my mind get really fascinating. The movie opens with a fantastic musical number establishing literally everything in about 4 minutes and 44 seconds. And that's the thing I really enjoy about it. Well, once we get past the title card, I should say, the very beginning of the movie showcases Mirabelle at the age of 5 years old when she goes to her door, but we don't know what gift she gets. And then you have the opening song where she's talking about everybody, her grandmother, her parents, her aunt, her uncle, her cousins, everyone living in the casita, to a very, very, very good song. The Family Madrigal is probably my favorite song of the whole movie. It's just the liveliest song. And the one that one in Bruno probably should have been nominated for an Oscar. But the one, Dos Agarritos, I'm mispronouncing it probably, the butterfly one. That's an excellent track as well, and I get why it was nominated, but it's not my personal favorite. But during the opening track of this movie, you know, we learn about all the characters and what their gifts are and what they can do. And we get a little bit of that, like, I don't want to say resentment or animosity, but there's a little bit there with, you know, Mirabelle talking about Isabella and Isabella's boyfriend, Mariano, and how she calls her sister a prima donna. And she says it very quick. And then she moves on, and that's meant to easily establish that there's, like, you know, there's some problems between the two of them. And even during that time, one of the things I thought that was really fascinating was Isabella actually walks behind Mariano and Mirabelle, but she doesn't notice either of them. She shuns them. She looks away. She turns her head. She twirls her hair. And this is the guy that she's supposed to be marrying. The guy that she's supposed to be in love with, the guy that, as we find out later on, wants 5 babies from her, you know, Miss Perfect. And she doesn't want anything to do with that. She just shuns them both and she walks away, which is, again, kind of an interesting little non-verbal cue about what her character is. And of course, you've got Luisa, who is wanting to go and help out everything, the beauty and the brawn, can do no wrong, as the line of the song goes. And I just really found that to be fascinating, that we got a bit more with, like, you know, the Dia Peppa, her Mirabelle's aunt Peppa, who can control the weather. We hear Bruno's story. You know, he disappeared a long time ago, and we don't talk about Bruno. And then when we talk about Julieta, Mirabelle's mom, there's almost like nothing there. I found that to be a very interesting tidbit. And I think it's because Mirabelle has a good relationship with her mom. But throughout the entire movie, Julieta's got, like, no character development. Not to say that even Peppa or Felix does, but it's her mom. And her mom is, like, really just kind of there. Her dad, his quirk is that he's accident prone, allergic to bees. And every time he gets injured, you know, he has, like, a quesadilla and he gets cured. That's Julieta's ability. Peppa can control the weather. And Felix is like the groovy kind of guy, you know, who kind of keeps her calm. Like, every time her mood gets crazy, the weather gets weird. But Felix is like the party animal type guy. He's just the laid back dude, you know, and they're really good for each other. And of course, you got Dolores and you've got, Camillo, who's a chameleon. Dolores, who has excellent hearing. I mean, it's the dynamic there is very fascinating. They all wear very orange colors, whereas Isabella and Luisa and Julieta Agustina Mirabelle wear a lot of the whites and blues. I don't understand that particular color dynamic because I'm not the, you know, animators on the movie, but it's very noticeable how there is that particular like difference between them, but it works out because it's very fascinating. But anyway, like, as you know, the story picks up, Mirabelle doesn't have a gift. Everyone knows she doesn't have a gift, and they kind of mock her for it. And I, you know, there's a part in the movie in the very beginning where this guy walks up and he's all like, oh, for you, I made you this not so special because you're not special. Like, you don't have a gift. Like, she has no value. And like, this guy, I would have told this guy to pound sand. I would have told this guy to F off, man. Like, what kind of insensitive dumbass literally goes up to like the black sheep of the family and that everyone knows doesn't have a gift, that it's kind of already going to be embarrassed for not having a gift, even though she's got like the sunny disposition and she wants to be, you know, like she wants to do what she can do, be the best that she can be. And then he just like mocks her for it, but she takes it in stride. She does. She takes it in stride. She just wants to help. She just wants to be the best person she can be for her family, regardless of everyone treating her different. And even after Antonio gets his gift and he ends up being able to talk to animals and they end up taking this family photo without Mirabelle there, you know, I was reading the Wikipedia and like when they broke down the story of it, they had said like, oh, the family accidentally took the picture without her there. That wasn't accidental. You know, I would even argue that wasn't even unintentional. You know, that was intentional. That was definitely done as a way to kind of exclude her from that, you know, and because no one stopped to think of Mirabelle. And that, again, is the whole point of the movie, her and Bruna, the black sheeps of the family. And she's got the great song, you know, following that, Waiting for a Miracle, which I really enjoy the fact that they kind of recorded her a little bit like off tempo with the music. It didn't match, it didn't groove, it didn't jive. And that's, of course, obviously a storytelling element to showcase how she's not in league with her family. She's not in line. She's out of step with them. And it's a very interesting dynamic. But what really pissed me off, actually, and again, like just how the family doesn't care, especially Abuela, is right after that, the casita starts to crack and she has this vision of the house falling apart and she runs back and she tells, you know, her abuela about it. And she, first thing she does is go right to her abuela, right to the boss, and says, this is what I've seen. Oh my God. And she goes out there and obviously nothing has changed. It was just a vision. But then Alma turns around to the town in order to save face. And she's all like, you know, the magic is strong and so are the drinks. Mirabelle is 15 years old. And she's basically completely discrediting her granddaughter, calling her granddaughter a drunk in front of the whole damn town. And like, neither Augustine or Julieta or Isabella or Luisa or any of them say an effing word to back her up. And then, again, on top of the whole thing with the picture, I was like, that part angered me. I've had something similar like that happen in my family growing up. So maybe this is going to sound kind of dumb, but that was kind of a trigger. You know, I had a moment in time. I'll just tell you guys this brief story where I was helping my stepdad. We were doing cement work, right? We were laying out cement for the pool. And I spent all day lugging around 90-pound bags of cement and mixing it and pouring it and smoothing it and doing all, you know, all the work because his back hurt and he needed me to do it because I had a strong back. And then at the end of it, I had to go to work and I go take a quick shower and I come back out and everyone in the family had gone over and like signed their initials in the pavement. They didn't wait for me. I did 90% of the work and they didn't even wait for me to come out in order to be able to be part of that experience. And that bothered me. You know, that actually bothered me. So on that front, I completely related with Mirabelle and I was like, oh man, F this, F that, F you, like, you know. That's some unresolved issues, I guess, I have with my own family. And I think there's a lot of that happens in this movie. One of the things I watched following the release of Encanto was actually a lot of like therapists react to this movie simply because the therapists were pointing out the generational trauma that the kid, especially Mirabelle, was experiencing at the hands of not only Abuela, but her family by not saying anything. And it's a very interesting like psychological upbringing, because it is, it's trauma, it's emotional abuse, there's neglect, there's all of these things that they don't give her like the time of day really for much, whereas they would do that for everybody else because they're special in their eye. And it is kind of difficult to watch, especially when you realize so many kids are ignored in their families. You know, like it happens. I don't think it's always like on purpose, but it can happen. And when that happens, so many kids just kind of get left behind and they kind of get treated like Mirabelle and ultimately maybe become a black sheep or just like ignored. And that's one of the worst things that can happen to a kid. You know, like one of the things I really like about this movie is the fact that like I've watched it with both my daughters and I want to make abundantly clear to them that like I'll never leave them behind. You know, like this is a movie that I love to watch with them because I think it reinforces that towards the end and I get to spend time with them watching it. So there's a little bit of that too. So after all of that, Mirabelle overhears Alma praying and freaking out a little bit because she is holding on so tight. Because we know from the beginning of the movie that when she was younger, her and her husband Pedro fled their town with the triplets, the babies, Bruno, Julieta, and Peppa, and they were chased out and something happened to the grandfather. We assume that he died. I mean, it's a Disney movie. Clearly he's dead. Later, we actually see that he actually died and we learn more about that. But, you know, we know that there was all of this problem. Like there was all of this, like she's afraid of losing it. And that's kind of why she acts the way that she acts. And here we get to see her being vulnerable. And that is very fascinating. So Mirabelle takes it upon herself to save the miracle, which she doesn't quite know what to do, but she thinks that she's got to start by talking to her family to figure out what exactly is going on and if anyone else experienced the same kind of upset in the magic that she did. And of course, from here, she talks to Louisa. And Louisa, super strong, she can flatten the earth, move mountains, she can move rivers, lift churches. She is absolutely just the very, very, very strong person in the family. And she's the one that carries the burden of it all on her back, and it is eating at her because she wants to be a perfectionist. She feels that she has no other value outside of her existence unless she's acting in service of the family or in service of the village. Like, nothing about her personality matters to anybody else, really, except whether or not she can do something for them. And it's like things like, could you go round up donkeys? There's a part when right before the song Under Pressure or Surface Pressure, where she's talking with with Mirabelle, and this guy's like, Louisa, the donkeys got out again, you know, and she's like on it. And it's like, dude, go get your fucking donkeys, man. Like, what are you doing? Go get your donkeys, you dumb. Like, I was so frustrated by the way that the town also just reacts to them. Like, it's like this something that the town is owed, you know, by the family, by the Madrigals. And I understand that, that they help, that they want to, like, you know, keep the village growing and keep it all, you know, contained and safe. And that's why they're all there. And I get all that. But there becomes this, like, complacency with the village and the way that they act towards the family in regards to, like, what the village needs. And there's, like, you know, a part two, like, where after the, you know, we don't talk about Bruno's song, where like the everything kind of goes crazy and one guy comes up from the village and he's like, hey, people are a little worried about the magic. What's going on? You know, and then Alma's like, I got to go take care of this. Go find Mirabelle. And that's the whole point is like they are, you know, it's like they only care, like the village only cares about what the Madrigals can do for them. Because if the magic created the casita, which is like alive, and the magic helps like the family have powers in order to help grow the village to keep them safe, it's a weird dynamic. It's like, what does the village even do? And also, like, why, this is going to sound kind of weird, but why doesn't the Madrigal family kind of rule with an iron fist? It's a little bit weird, you know? I'm just saying, like, the road to hell is paved in good intentions, right? Like, they could easily shift from one thing to another. At any point in time, someone could grow tired of the village being as needy as they are and then turn that kindness and generosity into animosity and malice and, you know, and maybe, like, go after the village, right? That could be Encanto too, which, by the way, the movie did very well, and Disney announced yesterday at their investors' earnings call that more projects with Encanto are happening, so... Sure. Yay. Awesome. All right, cool. No, I want to see more with it. I just don't know what they're going to do or if they even need to do anything, because it doesn't even matter. It's a good contained story, but, you know, Disney's going to Disney and money has to be made. Actually, this movie had a bit of a problem because it looked very similar to Coco. People actually were kind of comparing the two, and Disney had a bit of trouble on their hands with that. Never mind, you had the pandemic and it came out right at Thanksgiving and they announced that it was going to be on Disney Plus a month later. But because of the Oscar buzz surrounding this movie, they have re-released it in theaters. And it is one that I am tempted to take my kids to as their first theatrical experience, because for one, they know the movie, they'll be quiet, they'll sit there, they'll watch it, and they'll also have fun, I think, listening to it with that big sound system. So that's going to be kind of cool there. However, kind of jumping back into it, once Mirabelle and Bruno meet up, we learn that Bruno didn't leave. We learn that Bruno just moved into the cracks between the walls. He slipped into the cracks, kind of what happened to Mirabelle. But in this case, it's literal. And he has been living there for 10 years, absolutely undetected. Even though Dolores has super hearing and she admits later on that she knew he was there the entire time, still, he had just lived there. There's free food. There's entertainment by making up his own stories. I mean, he's just been in the cracks for all of this time because, again, he could see the future. He could prophesize things. And his prophecy about Mirabelle and his prophecy about her kind of being open-ended and her choice to either fix the house or destroy the house, and that was a problem. And, of course, he felt he would be blamed for that because, the black sheep of the family, everyone always blamed him for anything anyway. So he just chose to leave for a decade and just hide in the walls. It's very interesting, I think, that, like, no one really knew he was there, although I do think deep down everyone knew he was there. But because the concept of the song "We Don't Talk About Bruno," the idea that Lin-Manuel Miranda was going for, and he's talked about this in, like, the making of, was that it was like, yeah, it's like the black sheep of the family, we don't talk about this guy, but it's also everything we talk about is with this guy. And there's even a line when Pippa and Felix are discussing their wedding day, and Bruno came in with the mischievous grin and then thunder, you know, and they're talking about the hurricane and getting the umbrellas. But then Felix says, it was a glorious day. But anyway, we don't talk about Bruno. And it's in the moment when they're talking, even in, like, you know, when Pippa says, we don't talk about Bruno, but, you know, and it's that dropping that but, and then it's that, this was a glorious day anyway. It shows you that they have this memory of the event. It didn't go the way that they wanted it to, but it also wasn't the end of the world. And they still talk about Bruno, and they kind of put this bad vibe on him, this bad juju on him. But really, the stuff wasn't the end of the world. As Bruno explained at the end of the movie, he could just see that Peppa was sweating and he wanted her to, like, relax, just let it go. Which also, by the way, that line of letting it go in the end song apparently was enough for Disney to credit the Let It Go from Frozen as being, like, part of, like, you know, it was in the end credits of the movie. It's like special thanks to Frozen, Let It Go. I'm like, because they said those three words, and maybe he threw salt, which could look like snow. I don't know. Whatever. It is what it is. It was one of those little things that I noticed while watching this movie. But, you know, I mean, the thing with Bruno is when he explains, they do another prophecy and it shows that, you know, Mirabelle and Isabella have to work on their relationship. It's one of those elements where you're like, oh, great, brothers and sisters fighting each other, putting down their differences. But what I really enjoyed about that was Isabella is, you know, she's definitely, you know, stuck up, right? But again, in many ways, a lot of the golden children in these families, who, by the way, Dolores is only a few months younger than Isabella. They're both 21 years old. Mirabelle and Camille are both 15 as well. And so it's one of those weird things where, like, having kids at the same time. And I actually have a feeling that Antonio, who is 9 years younger than Mirabelle, or no, 10 years younger than Mirabelle, I have a feeling that Peppa and Felix ended up having Antonio because Mirabelle did not get a gift. I really feel like the most likely Julieta and Augustine, and Peppa and Felix were very much working on trying to get another person in order to have, like, to bring in another child in order to make up for this mistake, so to speak. I know it's a weird thing, but looking at the control that Abuela has on the family and how she very much wanted for Isabella to marry, Mariano, and then, you know, Mariano wanting five babies and then having a strong next generation of the Madrigal family, you could tell that this was something she probably was pushing for. And then I really wonder, like, what I feel bad about is, for one, the pressure then on Mirabel, and then even the little pressure on Antonio. But the way that the casita works, and this is something that's never talked about in the movie, really, but everyone has their own room, with the exception of Mirabel, because there's another room there. The room that Mirabel is in is the nursery. It is where the kids are meant to sleep until they turn five, that then they get their own door, and then they're able to then get their own room. The house grows to fit them in. But here, Mirabel sleeps in the nursery. She shares the room with Antonio. And that's why they have such a close bond. And it's never, I mean, it's, again, it's one of those things that's there in subtext, but it's very fascinating to see. And Antonio worships Mirabel. He loves Mirabel, probably more than anyone else in that family. He loves her because he fully understands her. And he's a really good heart, really good kid. And of course, like, you know, that's not the problem. The problem is Isabella and, you know, Mirabel. And so when they have their fight, we find out, you know, finally Mirabel tells her, like, just, you know, lays into her, like, you're just a selfish, entitled princess and your life is so perfect. But like I said, also, like, the people there who are the golden child in these families, they are put on a pedestal. They can do no wrong. And in this case, the pedestal that Isabella is on, that Abuela put her on as being the eldest grandchild, is the one that has to be perfect. Sure, she grows flowers, and everyone loves that she grows flowers, and that's the whole beauty part. But her song is like perfect practice poses. Nobody knows what's behind the smile, because she doesn't want to do it. She wants to express herself. But the way that Abuela has held on and kind of controlled her upbringing is that she's not allowed to express herself. Like, look at Luisa. Luisa is afraid that if she doesn't act in service of the family, then that ends up being like the worst thing ever. And that's going to destroy her self-esteem. And all she wants to do is just relax and, sure, do the work, but like not feel that it's going to be this ever constant burden on her. What I love about this scene is that at the end, it does get the result that Mirabel expected. They hug, they embrace, they love each other. It fixes the cracks, and it feels like everything is saved. Of course, because it's not what Alma wants, it's not what Abuela wants, they get into a fight, and it ends up breaking down the entire house. And in the confusion of it all, Mirabel, just shell-shocked, escapes and heads off into the woods. We see that the mountain range around Encanto cracked and opened, thinking that she just went out that way. And she did, because Alma follows and tracks her down to a river. At this point, by the way, no one has their powers anymore. They all lost their powers because the casita is gone. But that's never even really properly addressed, which I thought was really interesting. It's like, I understand, for the context of streamlining the story, having them not have their abilities and having it like kind of be explained. And it is kind of explained in the final montage, to be fair. But like, you know, it wasn't really devastating for any of them, which I find that hard to believe. I do. I find that very hard to believe for all of them who have abilities, who their entire life has been around their abilities. Everything that they're known for, that they're applauded for, that they are, is around those abilities. And then they lose them and they're just kind of like, oh, gee, shucks, yo. And that's it. I thought that was a little bit weird. But other than that, it is what it is. But what I love, though, is when Alma and Mirabel are talking and we get the story about how her and you know, the grandfather met, how they fell in love, how they had the triplets. And then, of course, you had this war drive them from their city. And in the process of that, the grandfather tried to stand up to these bandits, these marauders, and he was struck down. And in the grief, in the anger, the rage, and the pain that Alma felt, it cast those guys out, probably killed them. Let's be fair. Probably just totally killed them. And it built these walls, not only around the village with the mountain range, but it built the casita. And from there, Alma just did not want to lose it all again. And in fact, at the final song in the movie, she says, like, I'm sorry I held on for too long. I was afraid I'd lose you too. The miracle is not some magic that you've got. The miracle is you. Not your gift, just you. And I love that line because I think that more parents need to say that to their kids, if I'm being honest with you. And the final song in the movie is great because it shows them rebuilding the house. Finally, the village shows up here. Finally, the village is all like, lay down your load. We have no gifts. We have no, you know, but we are many. We can basically help you rebuild everything. You know, and I'm like, oh, finally, you all show the fuck up, right? Like, finally, you all do something that's actually like a value to these people who have given you 50 years in order to build up this community, to build up this world. And it's one of those things that's, it's again, like they finally, fine, better late than never. Okay, cool. But then at the end, they all get their gifts back. You know, Mirabelle gets the golden doorknob with the M on it, obviously, for Mirabelle, Madrigal, you know, whatever. Symbolic. And then Casita comes back. They get their power. The candle comes back. They're all happy. They have their gifts. They all take a family photo. And that's the end of the movie. And that, it's a good place to end the film. Right? It sets up the conflict. It sets up the resolution. It's all packaged together. And people recognize that there's trauma, generational trauma that happens. And that maybe it's best to like have an open dialogue, have an open communication. And, you know, not let people get to the point of where they feel like they need to be cast out. Like Bruno being the black sheep, or ultimately would have probably happened to Mirabelle. Let's be fair. It probably would have happened to Mirabelle if this whole thing didn't happen the way that it did. So first off, let me say, again, love the movie. The music is amazing. Lin-Manuel Miranda did an amazing job. It's worth all the accolades. Now let me talk about, let me go into my weird territory. I just want to point this out right away. I'm just going to I have questions about the rules of the world. So this movie reminds me of another film. I want to say it's like either 96 or 97. This movie came out with Peter Gallagher called Welcome to Whoop Whoop, which is about a like exotic bird smuggler who ends up losing all of his birds in New York, has to go back to Australia to get more. In the process, meets a buxom young blonde. They enter into this very physical relationship and he ends up like asking her to marry him. And he wakes up in this small outback desert town called Whoop Whoop, where everyone is isolated. Everyone out there is isolated. They've been out there for generations. And what they do is they send able-bodied people, men and women, out into the world to find a suitor and to bring them back for the process of procreation. Because at some point, they are going to start scraping the bottom of the genetic barrel. In Kanto, they have been in this place for 50 years. You can see in the opening of the movie or even in the flashback that there were like a group of people that went with them. So obviously, nature is going to take its course. People are going to, you know, find each other. And there's going to be a lot of slap happy individuals. A lot of people are going to be doing their stuff. And of course, as the village grows, it grows with people. And as there starts to be less and less and less of a genetic difference amongst these people, it kind of makes me really question how much of the village is turning into the front page of Pornhub. How much incest is happening in this particular world? And I know it's a Disney movie. I get it. I know it's a Disney movie, but it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, one of the ideas that they had originally worked with was, you know, like having people go out of the Encanto. Like I think Augustine was like brought in, he was an outsider. And again, like with the fact that they were isolated and they're alone there for all these years, as the village continues to grow, I mean, eventually there is going to be a kid or two that could be described as a flipper baby. And that is something that I don't think people out there want to ever have a discussion about because it's so out there. However, that's why I waited until the end of this thing to kind of bring up that particular point. Because that's like as far as the rules of the world go, that gets in my mind a little bit because I'm like, okay, how does this work? I love the movie. I love the story. I love the characters. I love the resolution. I love the whole package. But I think like the world building maybe needed a little bit more. I know, like I said at the beginning of this, it's a very small, very isolated story, you know? But look, going back to the Zootopia thing, a lot of people ship, you know, Judy Hopps with Nick Fox quite often because they had this kind of, you know, relationship there, these animals that are interspecies. And that's been a question brought up by a lot of people who have watched Zootopia. Like, wait a minute here, hold on. What if these two different species fall in love? Like, you know, like if it's going to be a horse and a donkey, they get a mule, or a tiger and a lion, and they get a liger. Like, you know, this kind of stuff can happen. So eventually, I'm just saying that if Encanto left untouched, would the casita, would the magical powers like be able to remove that particular genetic blocker? You know, and here's a question, and here's a real question. Julieta, could her healing ability, could it solve for a missing chromosome or two? That's a question. I should ask that to the director, but I'm pretty sure he'd block me on Twitter. Anyway, those are my thoughts about Encanto. I love this movie. I hope you guys like this movie. If you've listened to this whole podcast, I apologize. If you are coming in as a Disney file and you get to the end and you are like utterly disgusted, I have a very dark sense of humor. I do a podcast pretty much every night called Hollywood After Dark over on youtube.com/3bucktheater. Check it out if you found this to be funny, because you're going to get a lot more of that over there. And obviously, this is a movie that I do feel needs to be shown to people about generational trauma and how we treat our family members and how we grow as people and how we're not all the same. And there's so much there that is wonderful about this movie. Don't let my terrible, out of taste, poor joke ruin it for you. But I do want to hear your thoughts. I want to know what you guys have to say about this. So if you are listening to this where you get your podcasts on iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher or Google Podcasts, please leave a review where you can. And check me out on social media. You can find me on Instagram at RealMattJarbo. Same with TikTok. And Twitter is at MJarbo. I'll be back with another episode next week. Not too sure what the movie's going to be yet. If you have any suggestions, let me know. I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you very much. Have yourself a great day. And if you do want to support the channel, support the show, support what I do here, patreon.com/MattJarbo. Great way to do that. MattJarbo. Thanks, guys. I'll see you all later. Have yourself a great week. And peace out.